Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
The New York Yankees, with an unlucky loss in their Friday the 13th matchup against the Boston Red Sox. The Red Sox win their second one-run game in a row, this time 2-1, to pull one game within 500, standing at a 35-win, 36-loss record. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Terry Cushman Jr. and Charlie Smith, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? Go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles posted just about every day. Now, there is a lot to talk about in this game, but I think it's only fair to start with the stellar performance by Mr. Garrett Crochet. 8.1 innings pitched, an unfortunate incident in the ninth to give up his only run of the game. His ERA on the season, 2.24, I believe, as of right now. What did you guys think going out there and seeing him pitch like that?
I think it was a statement performance. I know Judge got him in the ninth inning, but he was dominant for 8 1/3 innings. And, you know, I don't know what the state of the rivalry is anymore, but, you know, Garrett Crochet is the counter to Garrett Cole. And, you know, Cole is probably 1 or 2 years past his prime at this point, and Crochet might be 1 or 2 years from it. And we've got Crochet for at least 6 years, and it's going to be fun watching him shove against that team.
I loved every second of it. 8 1/3 innings, the longest he's ever pitched into a major league game, was 2 outs away from getting his first complete game, his first shutout at Fenway Park against the New York Yankees. You could not have written a better script than that. It's unfortunate, as you mentioned, where he got bit, struck out Judge 3 times, already had the sombrero, was seconds away from the golden sombrero. Just really, really unlucky. I don't believe I've seen him throw 100 miles an hour back-to-back, period, in Boston. So go figure, you're going to do it against the best player in baseball right now. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out. This guy is better than Garrett Cole. Sorry, Terry. He's better. Even 2 years ago, I'd still take Garrett Crochet now than Garrett Cole now. Garrett Crochet now over Garrett Cole 2 years ago. Can't even talk. But it was an unbelievable performance. I mean, he was absolutely locked in. I mean, the first two batters, pitch one, one out. Pitch two, one out. He had 3 innings of sub-10 pitches.
He was absolutely pitching ridiculous.
He was absolutely on it. So let's just say this. He ended 4 of the last 5 full innings he pitched with no base runners because he got double plays. He got that working out for him. And I mean, it's just another one of those things where Garrett Crochet pitches, you have got to win that game. Now, we won that game. The Red Sox won that game. Thank you to another player we're going to be talking about in a second. It sucks that he's not the one that registers the win. It just goes to show you, you need to put a couple runs together for every single starter. It's not fair to put Garrett Crochet into this world where, oh yeah, we're only going to score one run for you and hope that you can, you know, shut it down every single game. It's the Chris Sale in his first year situation. Cliff Lee, when he was an Indian at the time before they became the Guardians, where he was not getting any run support. Felix Hernandez in Seattle. Jacob DeGrom in New York, finishing with a record of like 11 or 10 and 7 with over 200 punchouts because 15 or 16 games were no decisions. It's unacceptable. We've got to do better for him. Again, thankful that we won, but disappointed that he didn't get the dub.
You know, that's how you know that Crochet is an ace, I think, because it really does seem like you mentioned it's a rite of passage at this point to just have one-run offenses. I was going to mention DeGrom, too, because that's the comparison I would really go back to in terms of dominance right now. Crochet is just an animal. He redeems himself after his last outing against New York just a week ago. He got tagged for 5 runs in 6 innings that game. It was ugly. It was worrisome. I know a lot of Yankees fans were probably talking junk, but tonight he shut them all up. This is just an absolutely cover your ears, kids. It's a ballsy performance. That's just what it is. This is his second time going over 100 pitches this month alone. He did 3 back in May. He did 3 back in April. The dude is ridiculous. And this was actually his first time going into the 9th inning. It may not have paid off in the end, but I loved the decision. I thought, you know what? This guy has a shutout that he's working towards. He's only at 96 pitches, I'm pretty sure. He went out there. He handled Ben Rice. And even the pitch to Judge, judges him. He's hitting like Barry Bonds right now, genuinely. You look at that slash line, there's no one closer to Barry Bonds than what Aaron Judge is doing right now. It's absolutely ridiculous. And that pitch could have gotten him. But let's talk, did you want to say something?
No, you go.
I just want to talk about some of the heroics of the players that actually did win this game for us. Aside from Garrett Crochet, you got to score runs. Thank God for Carlos Narvaez. That dude is built different. The way he goes up there, the way he handles his at-bats, the way he carries himself, I keep forgetting he's a rookie. I don't know how he does it.
I got one note, though. And as happy and as proud as we should be for Carlos Narvaez, Terry and I yesterday were talking about the fact that we had one commenter say, during our positive hot takes, which people are going to say, what? The Bastards of Boston Baseball are positive? Really? Are they okay under the weather? Did they get new hosts? No. So the Red Sox are doing great. We've now won 5 of our last 6, if I'm not mistaken, right? So we're one game under 5. Yeah, one game under 500, 35 and 36. We also didn't really give Trevor Story any credit, too. I mean, that was a really nice single. It was a strikeout, stolen base opportunity. Rafaela knocks him in. We're up 1-0 pretty early. I'm pretty content because Trevor Story was, you know, I'm not going to say he was him in April, but he was really damn good in April. May kind of switched places with somebody else that we don't really know or like. And then come June, back to April again. It's like 2.0. He matched his output from all of May in 2 games. And now it's just building on that train and continuing to do more. So, you know, as one commenter has already said, 1 run off of Cale Yarbrough, not good. I agree. I think you should be able to tag him for a couple more runs than just one. And we had to work really, really hard to get that run. The Yankees tried doing the same thing with a stolen base. Crochet with runners at the corners and no outs. Strikeout, ground out. Gorgeous masterclass.
So just to weigh in on the Judge at bat there in the end, I'm the body language guy on this show. I'm always trying to read into it. And I'd say probably 80% of the time, I'm probably reading too much into it. But I would say at the plate, he looked like he was pressing a little bit. He didn't, to me, look like he had the same swagger. He's like, oh my God, this guy has owned me. 6 strikeouts in a row. That's what it got up to. We were going for number 7, golden sombrero, like Charlie said, if it happened, which would have been a great tidbit to talk about. But you could tell, you know, he wasn't himself, and he just wanted that monkey off his back. And I think, honestly, if it was a single, he would have been ecstatic. It went over the Green Monster. So, I mean, that's the best case scenario for him. That's what he got. And as that ball was taking flight, it looked like it was going to go over the Citgo sign, which obviously wouldn't. But it's just optically, that's how it looked on the TV. And I'm like, man, he just absolutely torched that. And but it was great to see him getting completely owned, because this might be the best season we see from any player in our lifetime. I don't know if anyone, if he ends up batting over 390, I don't know if that's sustainable. It might be, but if it stays above that and he breaks his previous home run record, that is the greatest season of our lifetime. And our ace just utterly destroyed him. Probably dropped his batting average at least 4 or 5 points before the home run.
Yeah. So one more thing, Terry. You brought up an interesting hypothetical. Garrett Crochet's pitching, ninth inning. He's throwing two FU 100-mile-an-hour flame-throwing heaters down the plate. You're not able to hit it. You're making contact, maybe. And maybe you don't hit the home run. You get a single. You get a double. Do you still leave Garrett Crochet in the game?
It's a tough one. I'd say
it's
yes.
A tough one.
Yeah.
I would have too. He has been owning that team all damn game. So hypothetically speaking, there might be some people out there listening thinking, no. I would have pulled him after eight. I would have pulled him after the home run. Like, yeah, okay, cool. You pulled him after the home run. If we're up 2-0 and the home run is still just one, the odds that he's going to give up another home run, pretty unlikely. I don't know how many times Garrett Crochet has given up back-to-back home runs in his career. Probably a handful. You can count them on one hand. Seriously. Garrett Crochet should have won this game. But truth be told, I still think I would have kept him in there. If you're throwing 100-mile-an-hour gas, yeah, sure. You could see it as being a little bit reckless, careless, but it's the Yankees. It's Fenway Park. You're the Boston Red Sox. You're the best pitcher or top two pitcher in the American League. You want to have that first complete game. You were so close to getting a shutout. I wish he got it. And even though, here's the thing, nine innings, if he's done after nine, we don't score a run in the ninth inning, there's no complete game. So in that sense, it's still tough because you can't guarantee that you're going to score runs in the ninth inning. There's no guarantee for that. So I understand why some people would say that. I would disagree with you because who knows? Maybe he gets shelled in the next game and he only throws 38 pitches or 58 pitches, resets the clock for 5 days. So damage isn't really done. But I was just kind of curious to see what you would have done. I would have left him in too.
Well, yeah, I guess with no runners on base, I probably would have given him at least one more batter. Volpe, though, was the one guy who was hitting him and had at least two hits tonight. So I wouldn't have. This was a must-win game for us. You have to get back in this. And now are we one game under or two?
One game under, 35-36.
You have to claw back into it. So it's a must-win game. And, you know, Cora did the right thing by letting Crochet at least attempt to finish it. And, but eventually you got to get smart. And, the first inning could have been cool. If he would have got Judge out on one pitch, he would have been out of the inning in three pitches, three outs, three pitches.
Wow.
That would have been, so he wouldn't have had the strikeouts. That streak would have ended, but it would have been a cool.
Wonder how many of those there have been in history. That seems pretty rare, I'd imagine.
What a 1-2-3
pitch inning? Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it happens. It's very rare.
Yeah.
I think Brendan Bernardino might be actually one of the guys that's done it.
You might be right about that, actually. Yeah.
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure he's done it. Where, I mean, I watch a lot. Being in LA, I'm watching almost every single Red Sox game, almost every single Dodgers game. And Tanner Scott came out, and I'm pretty sure he threw three or four pitches for one game. Like, it's silly. It's dumb when you throw 15, 20, 30 warm-up pitches and you come into the game and you throw four and you're done. Like, the day's over after, like, sneezing. You know, it's just
most definitely.
It's weird, right? Yeah.
You know, this has been a really nice stretch for us so far, and it's crazy because I don't think anybody expected it to be. I'm trying to temper my expectations right now, but at the end of the day, I see a stat here. We're 6 for our last 8 right now. 6-2 in 8 games. And these are against good teams, the Yankees, the Rays who were red hot coming into that series against us. We're on a 3-game win streak now, which is actually our first 3-game win streak since April 26th to 29th. I think that, I mean, our listeners and our viewers have heard us rail about Alex Cora a lot. And there's reason for that. Earlier in the season, you guys might remember this. I'm trying to remember the exact details, but it was in a Toronto series early on. And I believe the reason there was like a dispute is that we didn't walk intentionally Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And Cora said, well, maybe if it was a playoff game, we would have. And that irked a lot of people. And that's one of those things that I've been parroting. I have said very angrily in the past, well, when do the losses start to matter? Because they pile up and they buried us. And they certainly feel like they matter. Right now, Cora is managing, maybe not perfectly, but he's focusing on winning games. And I like that. I like that maybe that losing stretch that we went on lit a little bit of a fire under him and woke him up a little bit, because he needs to understand that this is do or die. We need to continue to play excellent baseball from here on out. We need to finish this 15-game stretch. We're halfway through it. The Yankees and the Rays had the best opportunity in the world to bury us, completely knock us out, force us to be sellers for sure. Instead, we have served to give ourselves hope. And that's a scary thing. If we can close out this series against the Yankees, get one more win, that'd be real sweet. Go into the Mariners, who are on a terrible skid, then into the Red Hot Giants, get to the end of that, get back to the Angels. And if we're a game above 500 at the end of that, the league better watch out, because the Red Sox are waking up.
This was supposed to be the stretch that essentially ended the season. And we dropped the series to the Angels just prior to this, the first Yankees series last weekend. And, you know, so I'm thinking it's hard to be an optimist after that. You know, it kind of felt like it was over. And, you know, we're back in it, and we've actually won 3 of the last 4 series. We won the Atlanta one, then we dropped the Anaheim one. Then we beat the Yankees, and we beat Tampa. And here we are with the Yankees again. I don't have the pitching matchups up. I know we do have Fried on Sunday, so that's not doesn't look too appetizing. But yeah, so in Seattle, just they're like the Toronto Blue Jays of the AL West. You know, on paper, they look so good, and then they just don't get it done. Toronto's 8 games above 500 right now, so maybe they're finally sick of losing. But I'm not letting Alex Cora off the hook for one thing, and it just continues to just totally alienate me. I don't want Meyer on the bench. I don't want him.
Yeah.
And it's looking like there's a realistic chance he's not going to start the next 2 games either. And if that happens, all that tells me is that Alex Cora does not have the patience for these kids. And Anthony is hitting like .060, something like that. And I don't want to bench him either, obviously. And he does hit, at least throughout the minors, has hit lefties well, as we've been pointing out. And you got to let the kids play. This season is not going to – we're not going to get into the playoffs unless the kids are hitting well. There's no path forward. You put all your eggs in their basket this winter, aside from the Bregman deal, and we'll get to Narvaez here shortly, but that's working out pretty good unexpectedly. But the kids have to develop, and I don't know what it is, but when Marcelo Meyer is on that field – even defensively, I feel really good about it. I like his presence on that field. And that pickoff tonight in extra innings, I forget who the base runner was, but just very, very fluidly made the tag, got the out. It was a huge out. We're not very good in extra. It was Volpe. Okay. And we're not a good extra innings team so far this year. So that was a massive out. And I think the energy kind of carried over to the bottom half, and we got it done. And so I'm running out of patience with Alex Cora. And John Farrell was always, he always got knocked for favoring the veterans over the kids, you know, starting JD Drew over Xander Bogaerts late in 2013. Nobody wanted to see JD Drew. And I know he was a good defender, but so I just, no, I'm going to lose my mind if he doesn't start.
You know, I'm going to say something that some people may disagree with, which is fine. But I think that when Bregman comes back, there is an argument, assuming Story can continue this stretch that he's on. I think there's an argument for having Story be your shortstop versus left-handed pitching for the most part, and give Meyer the other, you know, starts versus righties. I think there's an argument for that. There is no argument in the world for Abraham Toro to start at third base over Marcelo Meyer. There's none. It's ridiculous. Toro right now, you look at his splits, he struggles versus lefties this year, previous years. So what are we doing? Come on. Meyer's the better defender and, in my opinion, has more upside. Toro has been hitting the ball very well versus righties. I love him for that. Continue to have him platoon with Romy, as far as I'm concerned. I like that. That's fine. That keeps the team together right now. But Toro starting at third base, that was frustrating for me. And he made an error too, right?
And what happens in the 10th inning if Toro is at third? Does that pickoff happen?
That's a very good question.
Or does the ball go into left field?
Because that was an inch of difference, honestly. Volpe's a good runner, and fortunately, Narvaez's throw was right on target, and Meyer got his glove right down onto him. I mean, it could not have been a millisecond later. I swear it was that close.
And the other thing that's driving me nuts is David Hamilton, a left-handed hitter, got to pinch hit for Christian Campbell in, I think, the 9th inning against a left-handed pitcher.
You know what it was? He was inserted as a defensive substitute in the top of the 9th.
Oh, so he's already in.
He was
in
the game.
My bad. All right. Yeah, well, there goes that argument.
That's just one of those frustrating things, though. Okay. I mean, that is tough. I mean, that's a tough call to make because, you know, Hamilton is a nice defender, but his bat has just been brutal this year. You know, I said on Twitter very flippantly that, you know, the world isn't ready for a David Hamilton walk-off. And then after, you know, he got out, I said the world was so not ready for it, it didn't happen.
Yeah. And so a friend of mine texted me, and he's a Yankees fan from up in Maine. And right after the game, and he said, Narvaez is annoying. I was like, thank you. And I said this last night on Hot Takes, he might be as good as Christian Vasquez. That might be. And Vasquez was always a good defender, could hold base runners. And from 2017 through 2021, he was sneakily one of the best all-around catchers. You know, he could hit for power, just good hitter, what seemed to be clutch in a lot of situations. And then that 2021 postseason had, I think, a walk-off somewhere in there. It might have been against Houston in one of those earlier games. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, I don't know what the ceiling is. And I will say this about Narvaez. He does seem to be vulnerable to high fastballs. I was kind of noticing. So hopefully that gets cleaned up. But man, just what a revelation so far in 2025.
For sure. You know, I would dare to say that this might be the best season by a catcher in Boston, possibly since Veritek. Because if you really think about Vasquez, I remember when he sort of peaked and like unlocked his power, it was during those juiced ball years. That True. Was a weird coincidence. And he sort of, you know, his offensive production went back down after that. I know Sandy Leone, strangely enough, had one really good offensive season. Was that back in 2016? somewhere around there.
I don't remember, but he had 1 year too. You're absolutely right about Christian Vasquez, though. I do want to hit on that. Christian Vasquez was a career, you know, probably backup, better defensively than he was offensively, except for the juice ball year. He had over 20 home runs. And it was like, wow, let's see if he does it again. Yeah. And then obviously COVID is the next year. But if you took the law of averages in there, maybe he would have come close to hitting 20 home runs and whatnot. But I don't think he was going to do it again. And then after that, he played the same number of games in 2019 as he did in 2021. 23, 72, 276, 6, 49, 258. So you lost 17 home runs. You lost, 23 RBIs, and your batting average dropped 20 points.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Narvaez is great. Obviously, whenever a guy has a good season, even a rookie, I always have that voice in the back of my head that does, like I mentioned, like whisper, 2016 Sandy Leone, 2016 Sandy Leone, you know? I know Jackie Bradley had like one ridiculous whole year too. So, you know, you can never guarantee things, right? In baseball, anyone could turn into anything tomorrow. But I think Narvaez, the way he's starting out, I think he really could be our best catcher since Veritek. I think that's a hot take that maybe not be, it might not be so hot in a year, you know?
And could he even be better than Veritek? I don't know. It's a good thing I live in South Carolina, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, Veritek, I mean, he's a god to us, but is he a god to all the other fan bases from the outside looking in? I don't know.
Well, Tech's thing was that he was never like a huge offensive guy. Like he was more like the defensive Marvel champion, was a really good pitch framer. And he's the first catcher in Major League Baseball history to catch four different no-hitters from four different pitchers, right? Wasn't that his feat?
Yeah.
Like he caught, what was Derek Lowe, Hideo Nomo, Clay Buchholz, and who am I missing?
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
I don't know who else.
John Lester. You guys are right. You know, Tech, a career 776 OPS, which is actually 1 point below average in that time span. So you're absolutely right. It looks like his best offensive year where he played like a full year was 2005. He had a 122 OPS plus. So yeah, we'll see. Narvaez has a chance to do something crazy.
Without looking, I mean, he was a 2080 guy for a while, I would say. And maybe
three, four years. But his problem was also like he had gotten some injuries too, and that comes with the territory. I remember one of his last seasons in baseball, he played like 40 games. He had 7 homers, 15 RBIs, and he hit like 210. And like that was his thing. I don't remember the exact line, but he had like, okay, when he's there, every third game is going to be a home run, it feels like. But he just he was like on the way out. He just was not able to play and be the everyday guy anymore, because you're 39, almost 40 years old. I don't think he played to 40, but he was here for 15 years or 14 years, something like that. Maybe more. I can't remember. But I mean, he was, that was the guy. And I think everyone will forever love him for the moment, which is the shove. A-Rod, you know, dropping some naughty words, inappropriate. And Jason Veritek was like, no, not today.
They never really worked it out either. I mean, they were civil, but
I want Tech and Alex Rodriguez to be commentators in the same game. I want it so bad. I have wanted this for decades. It's been 22 years, I think, right? Wasn't it 2003 that happened? 22 years I've waited.
04.
It was 04.
Yeah. 04, we won the World Series. I thought the shove was 03.
No. Was it 04? No, it was that year, because that was the turning point. And then Nomar got traded a few days later.
Oh, my goodness.
I stand correct. I apologize. But over 20 years, I would love Tech and A-Rod to be just alongside each other. Just
that would be fun.
Epic. It would be so perfect.
So the thing I was getting at, though, was they never did really resolve it. And then we win the World Series in 2018. And I don't know if Tech had the same exact role he does now, but he was on the coaching staff that year. And you had the post game and everything on the field had been done. They did the pictures, all held up the trophy, and players were just kind of trickling towards the on-field Fox post game booth where I don't even know who it was. A-Rod was there. Poppy was there. I don't know who the lead guy was. I don't think it was Kevin Burkhart. But anyway, so they'd all made their way over, and then all of a sudden Tech is standing right there, kind of right behind A-Rod. And A-Rod's like, he's like, oh, hey, you know, and that was literally really the first interaction that they had. And unrelated to that, A-Rod was the ESPN guy on Sunday night with Matt Vasgersian, who I love a lot. And I actually didn't mind A-Rod in the booth, despite feeling a little bit dirty. But A-Rod even admitted a bunch of times. He's like, yeah, I was a moron back then. I was a buffoon. So it was good to see a little bit of humility, I guess.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Now, one thing I wanted to bring up with you guys is something that was very interesting, which was Rob Refsnyder starting in left field tonight. There's a little speculation. Some people just saying Duran was just getting an extra day off, although he did come off the bench and ended up having two at-bats himself. So I'm interested in that, because it's funny. I almost responded to someone on Twitter who said something just boneheaded, which was, there's no world in which Rob Refsnyder should be starting over Jarren Duran. And I was like, okay, well, look at their, you know, OPS versus lefties.
Refsnyder is
an animal. He simply is. He kills left-handed pitching. He always has. And sure enough, tonight he got on base 2 out of 3 times. If tonight was just a day off for Duran and he's going to get the other 2 starts versus lefties and Anthony is going to sit, that's going to disappoint me greatly, because I was looking through all the numbers. I'm sort of working on an article right now, just trying to figure out when Bregman comes back, what the best offensive alignment looks like versus both lefties and righties. And honestly, you look at Duran, he has struggled his whole career, specifically with breaking balls from left-handed pitchers. His OPS drops about 100, if not 150 points versus left-handed pitching. I wouldn't mind seeing him platooned a little more often if he is willing to sort of put the ego aside, because I know he wants to play every game, and I love that in a guy, but I don't like a guy who needs to play every game or else he feels slighted. You know what I mean? What do you guys feel?
So the power numbers are definitely down against lefties for Duran. He is a 245-ish hitter, so he's not an automatic out against lefties. And you know, he's got a high enough IQ. He knows what to do. He knows how to put the ball in play. He can go opposite field. So I don't love the idea of platooning him, especially one thing that hasn't happened yet is And you got Romy at first, and he hits lefties well, so I guess this wouldn't work. But Rob Refsnyder, the first couple of years of his career, he was a first baseman. So for as long as that's unresolved, I wouldn't mind seeing him get starts there. And I mean, and I can pull up Rafaela's numbers here in a minute against lefties, but I don't know. I just really like Duran in there. And the one thing we have to be mindful of is we don't know how long his future is here. Maybe it's going to be the full thing, you know, the 3 years beyond this. Maybe they might be open to trading him in July or this winter. So I don't know that platooning him is really good for his value overall. So
that's fair.
But am I gonna start screaming, you know, if he does get platooned? I probably not. But what do we do when Abreu gets back? This is a mess. This is a mess.
Do we rule out a trade?
I don't think he can. I've seen a lot of speculation about both Abreu and Duran. I think one of them has to go. Which one is preferred? I mean, it's really dealer's choice at this point. Right. Abreu is younger, but, you know, Duran obviously has that near MVP season, quite frankly, you know, in his tool belt. So his value is probably higher in some ways. But his window is also smaller just because he's fast. He's a fast center fielder. And speed doesn't typically age well.
And I wonder how Duran would handle the platooning, because if you go back to last year, he was going to play 162 games until he said that naughty word and then, you know, 2-game suspension. But so he wants to be on the field. Like, he's a grinder. So I don't know how well he would take it. And Alex Cora is not a guy that really wants to be losing this clubhouse.
Yeah, it's one of those tough situations, because it's very possible that when Abreu comes back, the best possible offense that we can field each day is with Rafaela in center. I mean, just for his defense, first off, but also he's been hitting lefties and righties pretty equally. In fact, he might be a little bit better versus lefties. That wouldn't surprise me. But it's very possible that our best offense has a Duran Abreu versus right, you know, type of situation with an Anthony Refsnyder versus left. But then think of the cap you're putting on Anthony. It's just a mess. One outfielder needs to go.
And, you know, the big knock on Chaim Bloom was analysis paralysis, especially at the deadline. And you could have had Breslow doing some housekeeping this winter to kind of streamline the roster a little bit more. He had opportunities to do it with Casas. He wouldn't have got the return he wanted, but you could have done it. You could have moved Abreu. I mean, his stock was somewhat high. You could have traded Duran as well. I don't know if I would have loved that, but I felt like you could do it during the winter more so than you could do it, you know, right now you need Duran, you know, even if he is just a platoon guy. Like, you need a guy who can impact a game like Jaren Duran. So it's hard to do it now. But if the kids heat up, if this is who he is and Anthony can kind of snap out of it and Christian Campbell continues to, you know, make strides, I think you can. There is a scenario in July where you can trade Duran.
Now, I will say there is one scenario in which we can keep all of them. And that specifically is, let's say that Abraham Toro cools off. You move Christian Campbell over to first base. Duran came up through the system as a second baseman, similar to Mookie. He was moved to the outfield specifically because they thought his speed would play there well. Could Duran theoretically play second base again? If not, is his defense worth Rafaela? You know, that's sort of the trade-off, right? Rafaela obviously can play second base, but, I mean, his defense is so good out there. If Duran could get his defensive, you know, aptitude back up to what it was last year, then yes, I mean, that's a natural switch. But otherwise, I mean, I would prefer Rafaela out in center and say, hey, Durant, how do you feel about sort of being a la Mookie? Just like how the Dodgers sort of started to move Mookie into the infield, and now he's there more often than not, it seems.
I think for this year, it's probably better to just move Rafaela in. Where was I going to go with that? Anthony, I mean, he did have that epic blunder, but has otherwise looked fine and made a couple of plays that, you know, might have been an out above average type play. But so I think for this year, I'd probably just keep him in left. I think it would be easier. This is even further outside the box, but I think Duran, you might be able to play him at first. I would do that science experiment. He's 5'11". I mean, he's not super tall, but he's not Dustin Pedroia. So, you know, that's, I don't know. First base is just, I wish Devers would just do it.
I was about to say the same thing. This whole thing would be so much easier.
We waited long enough. It's been a while.
And then if we don't really know what's going on with Yoshida, but if Yoshida comes back, I think Devers has to play first.
Yoshida has to be traded, even if we eat the whole value. There's just, he doesn't fit in the team, and it's a shame because I like him, but we have other guys that just fit so much better, you know?
Yeah. But if there's a world where he does come back, I think they've had the conversation with Devers, and I think Devers knows, like, yeah, okay, he needs the DH more than I do. So I don't know. I hope Breslow can figure it out. And the only saving grace for Breslow for me is, you know, Hunter Dobbins, maybe Richard Fitz, if he can, you know, if he can make strides as well. I think Breslow, in terms of the pitching infrastructure, has done a pretty good job, but I'd give him a C or a D with everything else.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, it is true that our defense has been very messy this year. And you know what? Let's embrace that. Durant at second, it would fit right in with some of the plays we've been making, I think. No, and someone did ask, if Rafaela did come into second base, where would Meyer play? My idea is when Bregman comes back. I mean, you look at Story's numbers versus righties, they're not good this year. So if we really are insistent on keeping Story around, Story plays shortstop versus lefties, Meyer plays shortstop versus righties. That seems like an Alex Cora friendly move. That seems right up his alley.
I think you just gotta trade him, similar to how you were just talking about Yoshida. I mean, he just doesn't fit. But I don't know. Maybe Alex Cora wants to keep being, you know, a little league manager here and getting everyone in. And so Rafaela this season has relatively even splits. He's got 3 home runs versus righties, 3 versus lefties. He's hit 17 points lower, I think 242 against lefties, but I wouldn't call that a major disparity. I'm pulling up his career numbers now. Let's see how he does against lefties over his career. He's a 217 hitter versus 259 against righties. And there is a power disparity there, but you can only put so much stock into those first couple of years because he's still developing. So
for sure,
kind of remains to be seen, but I don't know that that's batting average wise. Jaron Duran is about even with him. So I would be comfortable putting Rafaela in the infield over Duran, as crazy as that sounds, because I think Rafaela is the best outfielder we have defensively.
You know, it's a shame because I do have the splits up for Duran too. His on base versus lefties right now this year is 279. That's not a leadoff hitter at all. You know, you're lucky if that's a number 8 hitter, quite frankly. That's really bad. So
what's his career though?
His career splits. Let me find that.
Yeah, but really quickly about him, though, he started off very, very slow, and he has been picking it back up a lot as of late. But I mean, the beginning of the year was was pretty poor. I mean, he really struggled to like do his thing. Like that was his problem in relation to last year. Last year he finished, where did he finish the MVP votes? Third or fourth?
I think so. Third or right? Around there.
Like it was behind Bobby Witt and Aaron Judge. Like it was just, it was crazy how well he did. And I mean, even at the All-Star game, like he won the All-Star game. Like he was just that good. He didn't miss in 2024. This year, not happening. Instead of taking like a step up or maintaining the same level, he's taken a step back a little bit, you know, for the lack of a better term. The pop in the bat, not there. All the other numbers, though, there's a pretty good chance that he's going to come pretty close or, you know, match what he did last year. Like last year, 160 games, right? We're going to talk about numbers. 48 doubles, 14 triples, 75 RBIs, 34 stolen bases at .285. Now, he's been trending upwards, right? So far through 70 games, we still have more than half the season to go. He's got 7 doubles. That's halfway there. He's got 18 doubles, little under the mark. His hits were at 81 in relation to 191. He'll probably come close. Home runs, he's at 5 from 21. He's not going to match that. RBIs, he had 75. He's at 38 this year. He's probably going to surpass that. Walks, 54, down to 20. He'll come close. Stolen bases, 34. He's at 14. He's going to come pretty close. So I think at the end of the year, it'll even itself out. But as far as trades go for players, this is something that actually, I think Jason was the first person to say it, although we all know it. Jason was the first person to say it. Speed is the first thing to go. You don't lose power right away. You don't lose your hitting ability right away. Your wheels go first. So Jaren Duran is known for his speed first. Fielding, power, never really known for power, but getting on base, those come right after the speed bit. If he loses his speed, he's lost his most important tool, his most valuable tool. So if you are going to be trading someone and you are going to be trying to improve the team by moving somebody and it's Jaren Duran, you have to trade him yesterday. And it's going to suck because he is a big fan favorite here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, looking at his career numbers, he has really almost as many triples as he does home runs. So when the speed goes, that slugging is going to take a hit. Right. And as for his career on base, versus righties, it's .337. Versus lefties, it's .295. Although versus left-handed starting pitching specifically, it's .310, which isn't too bad. And that actually makes me just want to give a quick shout out to a tweet I saw by, I always forget how to pronounce his name. Is it Chris Cotillo or Cotillo?
Cotillo.
Cotillo. And I wasn't sure if there was a bit of a, you know, like an Italian flair to it or something like
Cotillo.
That. But he made a great point. He said, doubt Duran sits 2 days in a row, but they'll see how tonight goes and make the lineup for tomorrow. The other thing at play is not every right-handed pitcher or left-handed pitcher is created equal. If someone is bad versus lefty velocity, that might matter against guy A, but not guy B. If someone crushes splitters and there's a splitter-heavy starting pitcher, he may play. That's an excellent point. So that's something to keep in mind, too. I looked into it. Duran hits lefties fastballs pretty fine. He doesn't face off speed that much. It's really just the breaking that hurts him. So it's not like a complete wash necessarily. I'm not like, oh, this dude's just a Rob Ref Snyder style player, platoon him every game. But discussions need to be happening, you know, internally and externally. You know, it might sound to some people that we're being a little premature about certain speculations and whatnot, or being a little drastic with some moves. And we are, you know, we're just doing a talk show and throwing out ideas at the wall pretty much. But these are things that I think need to be discussed internally. And when we do get closer to the deadline, if we're winning or losing, regardless of that fact, we need to really think about what puts this team in the best position to keep winning next year, the year after that, so on and so forth. You got to be crazy sometimes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I just, Breslow is going to have to make some tough decisions here. And we haven't really seen him do that yet. So, and we haven't really had an executive in the front office who could really handle that trade deadline like Dombrowski did. So we'll see what happens. I'm fully resigned to Meyer's not gonna play, not going to start. Cora will be like, he'll smooth it over with him. Oh, you'll come off the bench. I know the perfect spot for you, and you're going to crush it in that spot. And then we'll all have ice cream after. And that's how it is. He has a phobia. He just has no patience for kids. And he's like, no, you're not hitting lefties. So, and I'm just going to rage about that. You know, Francona would never bench him like that. Automatically, systematically against lefties. So, but so tomorrow we have, I think, is this a rematch?
Yes, Carlos Rodon versus Hunter Dobbins.
Okay.
And then after that, it's Max Fried versus Bayo during a day game on Sunday.
Well, I mean, Fried has no chance.
That's a white flag.
No, I know. I'm just kidding. Yeah, that's not good. It's too bad. Last Sunday was the night game on ESPN. It's too bad it wasn't flipped, you know.
Okay.
But I'm gonna be a little bit pessimistic here. Dobbins struck out nobody in his last start against the Yankees. I don't know if he's gonna skate like that again this time. Like, there have to be adjustments made, and I kind of expect the Yankees to probably tune him up a little bit, if I'm being honest. And then, you know, we got to Rodon a little bit there, but we also got to Yarbrough, and Yarbrough pitched pretty well tonight. So, he tops out at what? 88, 89. He doesn't touch 90 crazy. At all. Yeah, exactly.
The next two games, if we lose them, I'm not going to be upset, because we won the most important game of the three. We've been riding a heater five of the last six of the last eight, as Nick mentioned. If we lose because Rodon is pitching against Dobbins, who did pretty well at Yankee Stadium, I'm not expecting him to be able to make the adjustments and, you know, be elite. He did great in his last appearance, don't get me wrong, but no strikeouts. Like, that is kind of an alarming statistic. Max Fried has lost no games all season except for one team. Do you know who he's lost one against?
The Rockies?
The Los Angeles Dodgers, and he got absolutely destroyed.
That's fair.
And I'm pretty sure I actually had friends at that game. That was May 30th. I'm pretty sure that was the game, because I was like, oh, you guys are going to go to a fun one. Sorry in advance. And Shohei hit two home runs that day. Max Fried has been as close to perfect as perfect can be. He's been an elite pitcher this year. I don't think that Bayo is going to be able to hold a candle to Fried this year. We've been, over the last couple games, mind you, 3-1, 4-3, 2-1. We won all three games, but we barely won those games. Two of those three were by one run, games that we typically lose. So it's going to take a lot, but I mean, if we split, I'm ecstatic. If we lose the next two, I'm not disappointed. It like met my expectation. If we get blown out, I'm going to be upset. I don't anticipate a blowout. I think they'll be close. Probably one of the two games will be a one-run loss. It is what it is. We've done pretty good over the last eight games. Let's be happy with what we've had so far.
I just want to win.
So do I.
Every loss is painful right now.
It sucks.
Yeah.
But if you lose because Max Fried is pitching, does it really hurt? It was Max Fried. It hurts more when Crochet loses.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know? And that's why tonight was so pivotal.
Absolutely. You know,
it's really like one of those situations too, where I think there's like an X factor going here too, where like, these teams just saw each other. These pitchers and these hitters just saw each other.
Yes.
Weird things can happen. Yep. It's just like with Yarbrough. He gets annihilated in the first game. Right. He comes out. He settles down. He doesn't go deep. He looks a little shaky, but he escapes. You know, pitched a decent game versus Crochet. And the bullpen came out and did its job.
Yeah.
Rodon versus Dobbins. Who knows? Bayo during the day, I don't understand that guy. He's a vampire. I'm really on board with that theory. It's crazy. I am anticipating probably losing the last two of these. And I agree with you guys. Tonight was the most important one to win.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be hitting the panic button. This was a big 15-game stretch, and we can compensate for a series loss with a sweep against the Mariners or even against the Giants if we can get there. We'll see what happens. But overall, I'm going to stay positive.
Yep.
Alrighty. I'm gonna be hopeful.
Yeah,
there you go, Terry.
We'll see what happens.
Love it.
Alrighty, so thank you guys so much for joining us. Again, we've been the Bastards of Boston. You can go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles just about every day. And we will see you next time. Let's go Sox!
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl. It's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl. Happy Friday. It's Jen. Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts. Like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.